This week on the show, we look ahead to what the Red Sox might be doing at the MLB's winter meetings with Boston sports journalist Sean McAdam. We react to the news over the weekend about the evil empire. Yes, Giancarlo Stanton now in pinstripes. And what are the Celtics and Bruins up to? We get to all that and more. Calling It starts right now. Welcome into Calling It, December 11th edition. Happy Monday to you and yours. Finally got some snow on the ground. Finally feels like winter.
Yeah, unfortunately.
You enjoy that storm?
Nah.
So this is where we normally talk about the Patriots decimating whatever opponent they did on Sunday. But Monday Night Football this week, so we're not going to do a preview on the show because it would obviously make the show very old very quickly. If you want to check out a preview of the game, check out our Twitter feed, at Calling It Podcast. We did a live Periscope earlier in the day, so you can get all your previews there. But baseball, actually, believe it or not, was the story this weekend.
It was, much to the Red Sox chagrin.
So that in the books, Stanton in the books, he's now a Yankee. The winter meetings begin. They began yesterday. They will really get into full force today in Orlando. So we will start there. We are now joined on the phone by Sean McAdam. He covers the Red Sox and the MLB for Boston Sports Journal. Sean, on his way to Orlando, have you made it to Florida yet, Sean?
No, a little more than halfway there, Alex. Stopping over in Charlotte for a little bit, but should be in Orlando by about 1 o'clock this afternoon.
Well, it sounds like, at least from what I'm hearing, getting ready for the Patriots game, it's 50 degrees in Florida right now, so you're not missing too much. Let's start off with the big Florida story from the weekend in Giancarlo Stanton, now a New York Yankee. And the report was that the Red Sox had no interest. Was this because Stanton didn't have interest in them, or were the Red Sox not entertaining the idea of bringing in Stanton, even if he was interested in waiving his no-trade clause to come to Boston?
Yeah, I think a lot of that remains a little shrouded in mystery here. I do know that when the Red Sox initially checked in, which was about the time of the GM meetings, about 3 weeks ago, I think the Marlins were in a position where they thought they had more leverage and were asking for teams to not only take on most, if not all, of the remaining $295 million, but also a package of talent in return in addition to that. And the Red Sox looking at taking on somewhere between $250 and $295 million in contractual obligations, plus having to sacrifice two or three top young players, be they, low service guys off the major league roster or high end prospects, and throw in the possibility that Stanton has an opt out, not the possibility, he does have an opt out, after the 2020 season, you'd run the risk of taking on a lot of salary, giving up a lot of young talent, and only having this guy for 3 years. I think we've seen that the market changed considerably in the last 4 or 5 days with Stanton refusing to waive his no trade to go to St. Louis or San Francisco. I think that put New York Miami in a different hole, and they seem to be pretty focused pretty quickly on the Yankees. Whether they gave the Red Sox another opportunity to get back in, or whether it was true that Stanton had indicated that he wouldn't come to Boston, I'm not sure we're ever going to get to the bottom of that. But it's certainly a complicated process that results in the Yankees getting another big bat.
So the Red Sox could have probably given more to the Marlins than what the Yankees had offered him. Would there have been any chance of the Red Sox being able to, I don't know, convince Giancarlo Stanton to waive his no-trade clause to come to Boston and be a part of the Red Sox?
Well, again, we don't know that he necessarily ruled out Boston. I mean, there were conflicting reports about him. Some people had him saying that he absolutely wouldn't go to Boston, some saying that he hadn't made up his mind on Boston. And as I said, I'm not sure we're ever going to get the proper timeline and background on that. But Stanton seems like the kind of guy that, when he makes up his mind, I'm not sure there's going to be a lot of convincing. There was this expectation, because he's from the L.A. area, that he would have approved a deal to go to the Giants. It's a great city. It's a beautiful ballpark. despite their struggles this past season. The Giants are usually competitive. There's a lot to like there, and yet, even after meeting with some Giants people late last week, he wouldn't waive his no-trade there. So it's unclear how many were on that final list of places he would approve to go, whether Boston was an ironclad no or a soft no, or it never really came up after they went through the St. Louis and San Francisco options. That remains unclear.
So the consensus seemed to be after the Red Sox lost in the ALDS that they were one piece away. That was the term thrown around a lot, one piece away from contending with a team like Houston for the title. You have Houston come back. They didn't really lose anybody. The Yankees add Stanton. Are the Red Sox still one piece away, or is that gap bigger, and how much bigger?
Yeah, I think it is bigger. It's hard not to think otherwise because I think the case could be made, even though the Red Sox won the division and finished just ahead of the Yankees at the end of the year, that, you know, the Red Sox won one postseason game, and the Yankees ended up winning the wild card, winning the division series, and taking the eventual World Series champs to seven games. So I think there was a gap, never mind Houston. That much was demonstrated in the division series that the Astros carried pretty handily. But I think you would now rank the Red Sox third among those teams. And I'm not necessarily convinced that they're ahead of Cleveland, a team that got bounced by the Yankees. So the fact that they've added Stanton and made themselves that much more formidable, I think ups the ante for the Red Sox to somehow come up with a way to counter what the Yankees have done.
And we're talking to Sean McAdam of Boston Sports Journal. Sean, winter meetings right around the corner. A bunch of names being thrown out there in regards to who the Red Sox will go after. Who do you think is the most likely acquisition for the Red Sox? Who do you think they're going to target heading into these winter meetings?
I don't think there's any question that since the end of the the beginning of free agency after the World Series, that J.D. Martinez has been the guy that has most intrigued the Red Sox. That doesn't mean that it's a slam dunk that they're going to get him. He certainly is going to command top dollar. And in fact, you could make the case that Martinez's value, that the Stanton trade to New York hurt the Red Sox in two ways. One, you've got the Yankees, their division rivals, getting stronger and adding another powerful 50 home run bat to go with an already potent lineup. That's bad enough. But now consider that two teams who it was logical to assume one of them was probably going to get Stanton, either St. Louis or San Francisco, both whiffed when he wouldn't waive his no trade to go to either place. So those teams are now also in the market, or still in the market rather, for a big bat like Martinez. So I wouldn't expect that Martinez is going to get signed this week. I think we are going to see, and probably have begun to see, the logjam has been broken somewhat in terms of activity. You had a couple of relievers come off the board this weekend already, and there's undoubtedly going to be more talk now that both Otani and Stanton have been settled, and the teams that were runner-ups can move on to what else they wanted to do. I think Martinez continues to be the guy they're going to target, but I think it may go into and pass the first of the year before Martinez makes a decision. Scott Boras's clients, and he controls not only Martinez, but Eric Hosmer, another name that's been linked to the Red Sox. Typically, Boras guys go late in the offseason as he builds the drama and allows teams to sort of bid against one another and drive the asking price up. So it's unlikely that either of these guys is going to get signed in the next 4 days.
A lot of people are talking about the bats. Personally, I'm a little worried about the pitching. A lot of people have said, the Red Sox can counter this Yankees lineup with strong pitching. But the news last night or Sunday night about Stephen Wright, Doug Fister's already gone. He's signed elsewhere. David Price finished last season on uncertain terms. Can the Red Sox sink any more money into pitching? Or do you expect them to sink a lot of money into pitching, given what they have tied up with Sale in a couple years and Price now?
Probably not. I think they're probably in the market for a back-end guy, whether that be the equivalent of Fister from a year ago, someone who could represent some depth options. until the Wright story broke last night, it seemed like they were assuming he had been healthy, or he is healthy. Then you have a starting five to start the year that is pretty formidable. But now with Rodriguez recovering from knee surgery, Pfister gone, and Wright's status uncertain, I think it's a given that there will be some disciplinary action on the part of Major League Baseball in conjunction with the story, whether he's found guilty, whether the charges get dropped, where things go from there. We've seen in the last 2 years Rob Manfred, I think correctly, take some action against guys who are even charged with this sort of thing. So the notion that Stephen Wright is going to be available on opening day would seem to be a stretch. And yet, you know, given the amount of money they have tied up in Sale and Price and Porcello, I don't know that they're in a position to be, you know, going after anybody of consequence. I think it's more some back-end type guys and not a big name. I certainly don't see them in on someone like Darvish or Arrieta, probably the two best starters on the free agent market.
We're talking to Sean McAdam of Boston Sports Journal. Sean, after the whole Stanton fiasco kind of settled down, the Yankees got him, there was a lot of anger among Red Sox fans and among Boston media. Do you think that there's a feeling in the Red Sox front office that they're kind of losing this fan base, especially with the emergence of the Celtics?
Well, I would imagine that's a concern. If it isn't, it certainly should be. It's very obvious to anyone who spends 5 minutes in New England that the Patriots have clearly surpassed the Red Sox in terms of fan popularity. That's something that you couldn't have imagined saying as recently as 15 or 20 years ago, but it's undeniably true now. And I think the great first 28 games or so that the Celtics have had, and the interest in Irving and Haywood over the summer may well have catapulted the Celtics over the Red Sox. And, you know, while in a vacuum, a baseball team shouldn't necessarily be worried about a basketball team. It should be focused on what it needs to do to put the best product on the field in 2018 and compete in its own sport. We know that the competition for the leisure dollar and the sports fans' attention is an intense one with a lot at stake. And, you know, this is a pretty PR conscious, perhaps too much so, organization. I'm sure they realize the danger in falling behind not just one, but two other pro sports teams in town.
He is Sean McAdam. He will be at the winter meetings all week, so you can check out his reports on Twitter at Sean_McAdam, or you can read them on the Boston Sports Journal. Sean, thanks for taking the time. Enjoy the rest of your trip.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me.
Calling It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
Oh, that hurts.
Doesn't feel good.
It's not a fun weekend for Red Sox fans at all. Welcome back to the Calling It podcast. Alex Barth, Alex Lovewitz. We're powered by CLNS Media. Check out their new website, clnsmedia.com, to catch this show and all their other programs. Over the weekend, if you missed it, Giancarlo Stanton turned down a trade to the Cardinals, turned down a trade to the Giants, and is now a member of the New York Yankees. We talked a little bit about it with Sean, but I wanted to get our reactions because they're not positive at all. I am furious.
I wouldn't say I'm furious. I'm definitely disappointed. Definitely not surprised.
We're like a couple of parents. We're not angry. We're just disappointed.
Just disappointed. I just figured that the Red Sox would be really in on this one because it made sense for them. Even if you believe, as many do, that they're about being a marketable organization, a marketable business above a winning team, this move still made sense. Guess what? 5 years, Giancarlo Stanton, if he stays in, that's a good deal. That's like and it would have been great for the Red Sox. They need power. It made sense on all cylinders, but still, they didn't fight quite hard enough to make it happen, and now your biggest rival and probably the new favorites of the AL have the home run king.
Well, you mentioned the PR moves, and I want to start here. I kind of went on this a little bit of last week when we talked about Gronk, but the Red Sox PR machine. First, let me say this first of all, and I'm sorry, Red Sox fans. I'm sorry to break this to you if you haven't realized already. Your beloved Red Sox don't care about winning World Series anymore. They don't. At least not at cost. They want to replicate 2013 when they took a rebuilding team and miraculously won, but that was a fluke. I'm sorry, it was. That was a rebuild team that got absurdly hot. That's not going to happen every year. The Red Sox still think they can win as a small market team. They'd rather make money than spend money to win big. They're the Cincinnati Bengals. That's what they are, and it makes sense because John Farrell had the job security, it seemed like, of Marvin Lewis. But John Henry is fine operating in the green so he can spend his money on a soccer team and his boats and his racehorses. If he's making money, why would he spend more to make more? He's happy with what he's making, which is annoying. And on top of that, the PR machine is enabled because we both know there's those the fans that say, well, J.D. Martinez has better, you know, hits better against lefties when it's below 40 degrees. They do suck, but they're what's enabling the Red Sox to do this, and they're the downfall, honestly. They're part of the reason why the Boston sports fan is such a negative image. It's the same people who said you could suspend Gronk for the rest of the season and the Patriots would still win out. It's the same people who like the Tyler Seguin trade. It's the same people who thought taking Kelly Olynyk over Giannis Antetokounmpo was a good idea because you need strong bench pieces. Shut up! These people are morons! People just assume because Boston is in the title, the team will win, and we've been spoiled, and it's been great, but that doesn't make that true. You need talent to win, I think is going to be the name of my memoir. You need talent to win, and I think a lot of the fans in the city, the Pink Hats, those who were born after the year 2000, okay, and I know people include us in that group, but we went through 03, we went through 07, we kind of know, all right? These younger fans are just assumed because it's Boston, the teams will win. And the Pink Hats who assume that, you need talent to win. You're not going to win just because you're a Boston team. And I feel like people ignore that fact a lot more than they should.
That's the minority. I think most people are frustrated.
But it's enough. I feel like it's enough that the Red Sox can justify signing J.D. Martinez over trading for Giancarlo Stanton.
I think the only thing that justifies them not going after Giancarlo Stanton in this deal and eating that contract is that they have someone in the works for next year.
Harper. Give me the name. Yes!
Harper. I think that's the only thing that justifies them not going 100% in on Giancarlo Stanton. And if that's the case, guess what? I'm all right with that. I think I'd rather have Harper than Stan, if I'm being
honest. I would too. But do you have any faith that that's what Dave Dombrowski's doing?
No. And
exactly.
But the reason I don't have faith that Dave Dombrowski's doing, I think it comes down to what the ownership wants over what Dave Dombrowski wants. Dave Dombrowski would have been willing to part ways with a lot of pieces to get Giancarlo Stanton in Boston. He was willing to part ways with Yoan Moncada to bring Chris Sale in. He was willing to part ways with Anderson Espinosa to bring in Drew Pomerantz. So he's willing to it's always been his thing. He's willing to let go of pieces that other owners or GMs or front office guys wouldn't be willing to get rid of. This doesn't make sense to me if they don't get someone next offseason. I think they will, though. I don't think they were that.
You think they will?
I think.
Well, somebody. To me, it's Harper or bust at this point.
Or Machado. If he doesn't stay,
there's no chance. Given his history with the Red Sox, there's no chance. You have to be semi-realistic. I'll say this. You mentioned Dombrowski trading for Sale, and everybody said, oh, Dombrowski's fine. He made the Sale trade. He took his best prospects.
Money.
He took his best prospects and threw them at the wall, and that's what he's done his entire career. Yeah. He throws prospects at a problem to fix it. He couldn't do that this time because he has no prospects left. And look, he failed to make the move.
You still have more than what the Yankees offered.
You do, but he... I don't know. I don't think Dave Dombrowski's a good GM, okay? He's never solved any problem outside of throwing his best prospects at a problem. He convinced David Price to come. That's the only one. And how'd that turn out? And
I don't think you're giving him enough credit. I think he's been a top five baseball mind in the past 15 years.
What's so difficult about trading your top prospects
look
for established
teams that he had, though.
That's a textbook trade.
Look at what he did with the Marlins. Look at what he did with the Tigers. And what he's done with the Red Sox since he's joined, I think it's a net positive, if I'm being honest. I think he gets a lot of flack for being the president of baseball operations for a team that has a very hands-on ownership group. That's it. I think sometimes he gets a little too aggressive, but I'll take a guy like that over a guy like – I'll take him over Ben Cherington. Ben Cherington might be better at evaluating young talent. But in regards to making baseball moves and to making trades that will better your team, on paper, the Red Sox are better.
One trade that's bettered the team. One, two, if you want to count Eduardo Nunez. Two trades that have bettered the baseball team.
I mean, he's brought in Pomerantz. He brought in Sale. He brought in
I'll give you Sale.
He brought in Kimbrel.
Did Pomerantz make them better?
Yeah, absolutely.
Let me ask this. Was there another way they could have acquired a pitcher who would give you similar numbers to Pomerantz without giving up a player like Espinoza?
But Espinoza's been a disappointment.
You didn't know that when you can't. Hindsight's 20/20.
That's true.
But
it's worked out. You got to give him credit for trades that work out, right? Because I'm going to give him credit for those.
Well, okay, but then you have to really, really hit him on the Tyler Thornburg trade.
That's the one where you look at and you say, that didn't work out. That did not work out.
And how about the trades he didn't make? How about not getting Stanton? I'll hit him on that. How about?
But again, I think this goes back to the ownership.
Whatever happened with the bullpen last year.
It's anti-Dombrowski not to make that trade. Like, that's the type of trade he definitely makes. And he didn't make it because I don't think he had the ownership's blessing. Because it doesn't make any sense that a guy who trades away Yoan Moncada for Chris Sale and trades away Anderson Espinoza for Drew Pomerantz would not go after Giancarlo Stanton for a couple mid-level prospects.
If he was that good of a GM, he could have talked ownership into it. That's part of what the GM does. That's part of what the GM is hired to. And he's also, I believe, the vice president of baseball operations, right, Dave Dombrowski?
I think he's the president.
The president of baseball. So it should be his job to inform the board, look, I'm the president of baseball operations, and this is the baseball operation we need to make.
Yeah.
A good GM, I'm sorry, that's part of being a good GM, is you need to kind of remind ownership that you're there to win games and not just to make money.
Absolutely. And I think that's what we need to kind of get we have to
no this
get
is
to the source
this
of,
is
of,
not I would go ownership one Dombrowski two but
we don't
Dombrowski
know. We don't
is at fault here to an extent.
I think so. We need to get to the bottom of it and see
absolutely
who made this decision, who had the final say. Did they really try to convince Giancarlo Stanton to come to Boston? Did they put a deal forward that would have been good for both parties, at least better for the Marlins? I don't think that would have been hard to do. And who was really the decision maker in this? I don't think it was Dombrowski. This is a move Dombrowski makes.
I don't think it is because he doesn't have the he makes it if he still has the prospects from the sale trade.
But the thing is, you trade away, guess what? Jackie Bradley Jr., he's gone. Trade away or Bogarts, one of those two. They're gone. And then Jay Groom, Michael Chavis, do that in a heartbeat, and they would have been up for doing that. To get Giancarlo Stanton in Boston, Dombrowski would have made that deal. John Henry did not want to make that deal.
As much as I come at Dombrowski, I do fault ownership first. But I'll leave it with this. So you weren't with the show yet, but we had a show the day after the Celtics didn't get DeMarcus Cousins.
Yeah.
And I was livid. I love DeMarcus Cousins. I still do. I think he's a top 10 player in the league. I know he has some attitude issues. I don't care. That's the kind of player you want on your team if you're trying to win championships. And I came on the show. You can go back through the archives on the CLNS media website or the CLNS app. Go back and listen, whatever the date was. You can Google the date of the trade. I don't remember. It's the day after. And we used to name our episodes by the date, so you can find it pretty easily. And I went at the Celtics. I was pissed off. I was angry. And it was like, this is what they've been waiting for. This was the whole point. This kind of player doesn't become available. They could have got him for pennies on the dollar, which the Pelicans, right, sound familiar. Pennies on the dollar, transformative player. And I said on that show, the only justification, the only vindication for the Celtics in this is if they go out and get another top 10 player in the next calendar year, which I didn't think they could do, personally. I did not think they could do. I kind of said it half sarcastically. Now they went out and they got Kyrie Irving. Mm-hmm. And they also drafted Jason Tatum. And I now look at it and say, okay, you know what? I was angry, but the plan was in place and it worked out in the end. So, you know what? Chalk it up as a loss for me. Good for Danny Ainge. Baseball's a different sport. The Red Sox are built differently than the Celtics. Dave Dombrowski's not trading for Kyrie Irving. He's not drafting Jason Tatum. The only vindication, and I'm going to use this phrase again, the only vindication for the Boston Red Sox in this, you said names. Name. There is one name that vindicates them, and that is Bryce Harper.
Absolutely.
And anything short of that next off, and I don't think Dave Dombrowski's that forward-thinking. I don't think that's his plan. And if ownership didn't want to pay Stanton, they're certainly not going to want to pay Bryce Harper. Certainly not.
It's going to be
a record
$100 million more on that. It's going to be $400 million.
And he's worth more money than Stanton because he doesn't have the injury history and he's a little more versatile in the field. He's younger and he's worth more. I would pay him. Baseball doesn't have a salary cap. The Red Sox are a big market team. They refuse to take advantage of that. And I don't. There are three teams that can act like they can print money: the Dodgers, the Yankees, and the Red Sox. Two of them are doing it. Two of them were a step away from the World Series last year. One of them wasn't, and it's the same team that's not acting like a big market team. Anything short of Bryce Harper next offseason, I'm disappointed.
This is one guy who plays a huge role in whether or not this happens. David Price. Does he opt out?
Ooh.
Does he have a good year and try to test the market? And does that $30 million average contract salary, does that clear the way so that you can sign a guy
like
Bryce Harper?
I didn't even think about it that way. All right, so a lot to talk about between now and then. MLB kind of turning into the NBA, which means
that's a good thing.
We,
right?
We're living for the off season now, not the actual season. But we'll discuss next year whether or not Bryce Harper's a Red Sox.
Can't wait.
Speaking of those Celtics, they're finally starting to get a little interesting. We'll talk about that on the other side. You're listening to Callin' It, powered by CLNS.
Callin' It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
Welcome back. Again, if you're wondering why we're not talking Patriots this week, Monday Night Football, we didn't want to record a preview because obviously that would get stale really quickly. So for a Patriots preview, you can check out our Twitter feed at Callin' It Podcast. We did a Periscope Monday morning. If you want to go back and cold take us, if you're listening to this after the game happened, absolutely go for it. I highly encourage it. But Bruins Celtics time. And the Celtics and Bruins, we haven't given them their own segment in a while. They will soon, especially the Celtics. They got a really tough portion of it, maybe the toughest portion of their schedule coming up. December may be their toughest month. They've won four of the last five. They're moving right along. But if you look at what they have ahead, they have some scrub teams coming up, but they have, I think it's 7 games in 9 days, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, Monday, Wednesday. And most of those are against bad teams. That's their schedule up ahead. But after that, they do have some days off, but the opponents get harder. They've got Washington on Christmas. They've got Charlotte. They've got Houston right before New Year's, who may be the best team in the NBA right now. So it's really prove-it time for the Celtics here. First, they're going to run through some conditioning, and Brad Stevens said all their off-season conditioning kind of leads up to these couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, that Houston game is going to be awesome.
Oh, it's going to be a must-watch game. It's appointment viewing. Both teams, whether you like it or not, top two teams in their respective conferences right now. Obviously, Golden State's better than Houston. Cavaliers probably better than the Celtics. But these are the two teams that are playing unbelievably right now. To see Harden go up against Irving, although yep. They probably won't be guarding each other. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch. Can't wait.
And then actually, I think they have Cleveland right after New Year's, a week or two after New Year's.
Yeah, and IT might be back by then. So
it's getting good. It's starting to get real good. And how about Jason Tatum?
Oh.
How about that kid?
He is so polished offensively. He leads
and
the
he
NBA
wasn't at the draft.
In 3-point field goal percentage. Yeah, it's crazy. Which is what you love to see. And if you hear Brad Stevens talk about him, part of the reason his game translates so well to the NBA level is because he's just smooth. He's just so smooth.
It all looks
calm.
Effortless.
It really
Except
does.
Except when he got stuffed by the rim the other night.
Yeah. Yeah. But you got to love where the Celtics are at. And there are these murmurs, untradeable. I wouldn't trade Tatum for anybody. You start hearing that. I think that's a little over the top. But he's looking like a guy whose ceiling is really endless.
I don't think there's any chance the Celtics trade Tatum for Davis because there's no way the Pelicans would do it. But
yeah.
I'll say this too, keeping with the kids, Jaylen Brown, between Jaylen Brown's mask, Jaylen Brown's goggles, Kyrie Irving's mask, I love how goofy this team looks. And I want between the short shorts, the high top fade, the goggles, Jaylen Brown looks straight out of another decade, and he needs to just try to look as old school as possible. Yeah. I want him to go Patrick Ewing knee pads next.
Oh, that'd be amazing. That'd be hilarious. Yeah, maybe a headband on top of it. Just to try to load up on the accessories. I think
yeah.
That's the way to go.
But like the old school accessories, not like the new age shooting sleeve and all that. No, not necessarily the headband, but I'm saying like just loading up on the accessories, then there's just going with the old school look.
That's true. All right, maybe the wrist sweatband with the logo on it. Like I don't
yes,
know like
yes.
Has those anymore.
So some real cutting basketball talk for you there.
Yes.
The Bruins are also playing really well. Now that they're healthy, as much as I ripped them, and I early in the season, maybe it's because they're not healthy, but I don't think it is. It was. They've won four of their last five. They're playing exceptional hockey. That one loss is to Nashville, and they actually played okay in that game, despite giving up a few early goals. And they've got a relatively easy stretch of their schedule coming up. The old saying is, If you are in a playoff spot for U.S. Thanksgiving, you're in good shape. Here we are a couple weeks after Thanksgiving. Bruins holding on to a playoff spot. Are you, and I feel like we do this every week. Are you buying this team yet as a playoff team?
I think so. I think Tuca's also.
Because you weren't in last week.
No. I said they were a playoff team last week. I said they could sneak in as a 6-8 seed.
That's not saying they are a playoff team. That's saying they could sneak in. Are you expecting them to make the playoffs concrete?
I think it all hinges on whether or not Tuca can continue to play well. I think
so. You're not 100%.
Not 100%, but I'm definitely getting there. I think Tuca's starting to take back that starting role. Khudobin a couple games ago, he got kind of shelled, let up 4 goals and like 14 shots faced. So I think with Tuca playing more confidently, playing better, this team obviously will start playing more confidently, playing better. And this stretch, I don't think you're giving enough credit. They have coming up the Red Wings, not great, but then they have the Capitals, the Rangers, the Blue Jackets.
Oh, I skipped my eyes. No, you're right. I was looking at after that, Buffalo, Winnipeg, Detroit.
Yeah.
I missed those three. So it's going to get really hard, then really easy.
Yeah, and even the Jets aren't playing that horrible. They're playing better than
the
Bruins.
Most of these games are home. They have 6 of their next 8 at home.
Yeah, so they play the Capitals and the Rangers at home, and the Blue Jackets all at home. So if they come out of those the 3-game set winning 2 of those, they'll be in really good shape.
Even just get 3 points, win and an overtime loss.
Yeah.
I think this is a playoff team. If they can stay healthy, which is a big if, but you have David Backes playing without his colon. Who knows what Patrice Bergeron's dealing with. This team's starting to get likable, and the kids have obviously been great. Charlie McAvoy seems legit. I'm really enjoying the Bruins. To me, are almost just as fun of a watch as the Celtics right now. Just it's so different from Claude when they just played such a boring style of hockey and they didn't showcase any of their talent. They're not doing it as much as I would like them to, but the tempo's up. They are starting to develop some not elite scores, but they have go-to scores now, which they never had. You didn't know who the next goal was coming from under Claude. It was really by committee. Now you know Marchand, Bergeron, Pasternak. McAvoy's probably going to have an assist tonight if they're playing well. They kind of have established a hierarchy of offense which they never had.
Yeah, and you're getting the young guys involved who are playing very well, and you're getting a really good contribution from the veterans. Backes, obviously, McAvoy's playing really well, and Pasternak, I think he's leading the team in points right now. So overall, love what you're seeing from the Bruins, given what their roster is right now.
You know, you're wondering why we're not talking about it that much. If you're listening, if you couldn't tell, we like to complain. There's not much to complain about in the world of the Celtics and the Bruins right now. So we'll see what happens come February. But that's it for that roundup. We got one more thing coming up. You're not going to want to miss this. On the other side, you listen to Callin' It, powered by CLNS.
Callin' It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
All right, welcome back to Callin' It. One of our favorite shows, me and Lovewood's both, wrapped up. It's 21st, right?
21st season.
21st season during the week, that being South Park. And they've switched to more of a, what's the term? A serialized
version.
Yeah. Not as much this season. They kind of went back to the individual episodes, but I thought another great season. It kind of hit a lull before they went to the serialized ones. And I think they did a great job this year.
I thought it was meh to start, but I think the last two episodes were the best two episodes of the season. Specifically, the second to last episode.
The second to last one was amazing.
Was one of the funniest South Park episodes I've seen in years. With PC Principal falling in love, Mr. Mackey falling. Spoiler alert, Mr. Mackey.
Yeah, spoilers on this whole thing.
Yeah, Mr. Mackey falling in love as well.
I'm sure there's people sitting on the edge of their seat for the plot of South Park.
Yeah, Hootie and the Blowfish playing in the background. They brought that back a little bit this past week.
But now wait, you don't like Hootie and the Blowfish, right?
I think they're just. Ugh.
See, I got so happy when that, because I love Hootie. I think Hootie and the Blowfish is the most underrated band. There was that thing going around on Twitter last week, most underrated and overrated band. I had Hootie as my most underrated. By the way, Grateful Dead, most overrated. Deal with it.
I would agree with Grateful Dead. Underrated, Hootie and the Blowfish.
Yeah, I love Hootie. It's such good, relaxing, chill music.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd agree with that. I think Hootie and the Blowfish are pretty much right where they're supposed to be. But back to the South Park. Yeah, it was not because South Park is very political, so we'll try to avoid that. I personally love how South Park goes about, you know, political commentary right. and societal commentary.
No, it's in my opinion, you're not going to get much better satire from a TV show than South Park.
And it's kind of from because I'm really against victimhood mentality. I feel like a lot of people have that, and a lot of people have it rightfully so. There are a lot of people who have it who don't really have a claim. And I feel like it touched on that very well, touched on Trump voters, kind of everything that we're dealing with. And it brought
the white family in the last episode. It's just stuff like it's so simple and you don't like you think of it as obvious, but nobody's done it yet. And it's just it's really funny.
It's the way they go about it.
Right.
The way they go about, you know, just breaking things down to the simplistic form.
There's so many shows that are satire, but they want it to be deep. Like you have to think about it to figure it out. South Park's like, nope, this is what it is. Like,
yeah.
This is the joke we're trying to make. We're going to beat you over the head with it.
And they touch on it in
like one of the best South Park episodes of all time is Trapped in the Closet.
Oh,
R. Kelly. And it's kind of like, that's the peak of it is they're just going to beat you over the head with the same joke. There's like, I hate when I watch a show and everybody's like, oh, this was a great message. I'm like, I didn't really get it.
Yeah.
Like, it didn't seem that way to me. You're never going to have that with South Park.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes they try, I feel like they get too cute with it, trying to connect things that might not be able to be connected. They do that once in a while. But the past 2 weeks, I think they touched on it in a great way. And you know what? In a day and age where politics is so tied in with comedy, specifically Trump, and we talked about this before he went on, the way they depicted Trump as Mr. Garrison,
right.
as it's original, no one else has done that, and it's not preachy. It's just like, it's funny. It's an actual character in the show.
Not just that. I love Garrison. Garrison has always been one of my favorite characters.
Oh, yeah.
Before the Trump thing, and I don't think... And Matt and Trey, actually, it's not that I don't think. I've seen the interview. They didn't expect Trump to win. That's why they felt comfortable making Garrison Trump, because after the election, they could just put him back to Garrison. Obviously, that didn't happen.
Yeah.
But they've been able to keep him in the show as Mr. Garrison, not necessarily as Donald Trump, which is great, because he's just such a – the witches episode when just comes on Air Force One is fantastic. Who is your favorite character this season?
This season, my favorite character – oh, that's really tough. My least favorite, I hated Kyle this season. He was brutal.
Oh, but he gave some of the funniest moments. The whole callbacks to the movie in that second to last episode were amazing.
Oh, it's hilarious. Like mother, like son. And then Cartman's girlfriend. Oh my God,
Heidi. You didn't like Heidi?
No, I thought she was great. I think the fact that there was a female Cartman was awesome.
That Heidi was my favorite character.
But it came full circle, and then the final episode where she's like, "You tried to kill me like multiple times." To Cartman was hilarious.
Well, we've all been in that situation. Because like the whole thing where we've all been in that situation where you like a girl and she ends up with some guy and then he just ruins her, and we've all seen that happen, and they just depicted that so perfectly.
Yeah. But it's more funny because there's no rivalry like Cartman and Kyle.
Right.
And to see this girl.
They put a girl in the middle of it.
Kyle became Heidi and Heidi became Cartman.
Right.
So it was kind of like to see all these shifts and how these characters acted was hilarious. I'm looking forward to see if they carry this storyline over
Cartman
into next
Heidi?
Season. That, yeah. Mr. Garrison being the president still, PC principal better be back.
Yeah, PC, they used him a lot the first season he was on. They didn't use him much last season, but they brought him back, I thought, which was good. And Strong Woman will probably hang around. That's the, for those of you who don't watch South Park, it's the actual name of a character.
Yeah, Strong Woman.
Strong Woman and Precinct
Vice
Principal.
Principal Woman.
Principal Woman, that's right, yes.
And then what's Mr. Mackey's love interest? What's her
name? Misconduct.
Misconduct, yes.
Oh, I thought that whole, just basically what they did is, for like a lot of the characters they have, they introduce either female versions of the male characters and male versions of the female characters. I thought that was really interesting.
There's a lot of female versions of the male characters because you have Heidi as Cartman.
Right.
Strong Woman as PC Principal.
Misinformation.
And Misconduct as Mr. Mackey. So you have that a lot.
Misinformation's a character too from another episode. Oh, she's the psychic they go to see when Butters thinks Cartman is dead.
Okay, maybe, yeah.
That's a good episode too.
Yeah. But it was a good season. It's solid. It's funny. It's awesome to see how South Park's evolved. Family Guy, I can't watch it anymore. It's the same thing every episode.
I still hang on. I'm still a Seth MacFarlane fanboy.
I like Seth MacFarlane, but they have so many writers, and it's the same formula. You know, cut back to this obscure.
I stopped watching The Simpsons. I think I feel the way about The Simpsons you do about them. Like, I still like The Simpsons, and I'll go watch the old episodes all the time. But the new ones, they're just out of ideas.
Yeah, I haven't watched Simpsons in a while. I think the South Park's the only one of those shows that still has.
I'll say this. The 10 o'clock Wednesday time spot on Comedy Central is much watched because it's South Park in the fall, and I think that's going to be Drunk History's time spot.
Drunk History's great.
If you don't watch Drunk History, literally they just get comedians drunk and they tell their favorite story. Truthfully. I've learned from watching that show.
And then they have an actual...
Right, and then they like have actors act it out. But yeah. Like, let's say that while telling the story, the comedian burps, the actor will burp. It's great...
Or they'll be sidetracked by a different story, unrelated,
exactly, yeah.
And the drunk character will start saying that in the whatever scene they're in.
If you need a good intro one, there's a sports figures one to bring us back to the crux of this podcast. And it's, who are the story? I know one of them is Jim Thorpe.
Yep.
And they have the guy from Game of Thrones as Jim Thorpe. But that's a good one. So, you know, Drunk History is also a good show, but another fantastic season, South Park. Well done. Well done, Matt and Trey. They did it again.
Yeah.
All right. That's going to do it for us this week. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at Callin' It Podcast. Subscribe on iTunes as well. And make sure you follow at CLNS Media on Twitter. Check out their website. Check out this show and the rest of their great content, clnsmedia.com. Next week, Patriots Steelers. We will have the breakdown. Will we be in panic mode, perhaps? Or will things be going according to plan? Celtics tough week two. We'll talk about that. All that more next week. Until then, he's Alex Lebowitz. I'm Alex Barth. This has been Called It, powered by CLNS. And we'll talk to you next week.